Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. In a special interview with my old friend Ed Reinhardt, recorded here in the studios of Radio Curious on Sunday about noon, January 14th, 2006. The idea for this interview arose when I saw Ed playing in Ukiah at the Himalayan Cafe not too long ago. Keep playing, Ed. Keep playing. A couple of nights ago. And then I remembered, my thoughts went back to the Russian River Run that I was running in over in Talmadge about 24, 25 years ago. I came back to the start of the race. I ran the whole race. And there was this man sitting playing a little keyboard, much like the one he's playing here in the studios of Radio Curious. I went up to him, and he started talking. And we had this long conversation. So, Ed, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I've always wondered how it is that you can, I guess for some of us, it's walk and talk at the same time, but you can play the piano and talk at the same time. Can you do that while we're talking right now?
If I can play a different tune, because I don't know your theme very well.
Sure, go for it. Whatever, whatever works.
A little bluesy thing, you know, that's more what I can walk and talk and play with.
That's what you were doing after that long run.
Yeah.
So, Ed, the last time we visited was approximately 4 years ago. That wasn't really the last time we visited, but it was the first time that you were on Radio Curious. And you were just leaving Mendocino County. If I remember correctly, you had never been out of the United States, and you were on your way to Italy.
That's correct.
To make a new life. So, what happened? You went to Italy, and you've your life has changed. Tell us about it. Share us some stories.
Of course, I had wanted to go to Western Europe for quite a few years, and but the problem, as many people may know, with traveling is that you usually have to maintain some kind of home front. And through a series of situations, my living situation here, which had been quite wonderful, took a bit of a nosedive through no one's fault. It was just one of those things that comes around after a while. And I realized that now I was free to travel. At first, I was depressed because I was looking for a new place to live, and I couldn't find anything that fit with the kind of lifestyle to which I had become accustomed and couldn't really afford. And then when I realized, though, that I was free to travel, it was a classic case of a door closing and another door opening. And it was all about being able to see that other door opening. It took me a month or so, but then I saw it.
When that door opened, what did you see?
I saw that since I no longer had a living situation, I didn't have to worry about maintaining it once I was gone. So I saw it as an opportunity for some personal freedom, whereas at first I just saw it as a kind of a slide into disaster, or a slide backwards at any rate, a few backward steps.
The personal freedom that you found?
The freedom to travel. I was, you know, a single man. I own very little. I had very little money, anything like that. So I sold some of my musical equipment, basically, and a few other personal possessions I'd accumulated over the years. Once a year, I think people should go through their stuff and see what they haven't used in that year. And if you haven't used it in a year, you probably don't need it.
Sitting here in my studio makes me say, oh, my God.
Yeah, you could probably do a pretty good clean out in here, Barry. But at least it's sort of organized, I suppose. So anyhow, so that gave me the freedom to travel. And I began putting out the word to my friends, sort of networking, we might say, just telling people that this was what I wanted to do. And sure enough, people began to pop up with things like, oh, well, I have a friend that lives over here, and I have someone I know that lives there, and they might let you stay for a little while, and so forth and so on. And one of these connections was some people that the people out at Fry Vineyards had met in the course of their wine work. And they knew these people that lived outside Florence. And so my plan became to go freeload off as many of my friends' friends as I could. One might question if they're still friends, but at any rate, I did that. And then ultimately ended up at this place in Florence, outside Florence, Italy, by making an offer to rent a room at a very discounted rate over the winter when they're not doing much business. They take in tourists in the summer. And so I spent the winter there. And as I will often do, I managed to play a little piano while I was there. And the folks liked it. They liked the music. We all began to get along quite well. And when the winter ended, they were able to come up with an offer of sort of a free lodging situation for me. Modest, but the price was certainly right. And so I stayed on, and I ended up staying in Europe for almost a year the first time.
So that brings us to 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And then you came back. I've seen you here in Ukiah any number of times, off and on, since 2002.
Actually, you've seen me three times.
Well, how high can a person count?
That's right. How much? But it probably seemed like more. Yeah, I often get that. You know, gee, seems like you've been here an awful lot, Ed. No, I just showed up a few days ago. But, you know. No, it was fine. You know, of course, the political situation was kind of getting interesting right in there. It was, from my point of view, it was a good time actually to be out of the country because I was very unhappy with the sort of rush to war that was going on. I think I can say that I didn't think it was a good idea from the absolute get-go. And so when I got to Europe, I found that I had to... I wanted to always make a point to let people know that I was not some sort of warmongering, that I wasn't in favor of the policy that was being promoted by the government. So I would always tell them a little joke that I had heard about St. Peter at the Pearly Gates. And a guy walks up and St. Peter says, "Who are you?" And the guy says, "I'm Einstein." St. Peter says, "Well, that's very well and good that you say you're Einstein, but you need to prove it because this is heaven and we have to be sure." And the guy says, "Well, let me just use this little blackboard that has magically appeared next to the gates." And he writes this equation, and it's the theory of everything that scientists have been looking for now for some time. It's concise, it's clear, it explains everything. And St. Peter says, "Oh, very good, Einstein, go on into heaven." The next guy shows up, he says, "Who are you?" The guy says, "Well, I'm Pablo Picasso." And St. Peter says, "Well, well and good, but can you prove it?" And he says, "Well, let me just do something on this blackboard under this theory of everything." And with a few bold and elegant strokes, he creates an artistic masterpiece of the highest order. Next guy walks up, and he says, "Okay, but Pablo Picasso, very good, go on in." The next guy walks up, St. Peter says, "Well, who are you?" The guy says, "Well, I'm George W. Bush." He says, "Well, can you prove it to me?" The guy says, "I don't understand." St. Peter says, "Well, look at this blackboard. Einstein did this, Picasso did this." The guy says, "Who's Einstein and Picasso?" St. Peter says, "George W. Bush, go on in." The Europeans appreciated that.
Yeah, I can understand why, yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah, it was a good time to be over there, or a good time to be not here, and it was a good time to be over there as well.
So has your music changed? Have things evolved?
I don't think my music has changed a great deal. For one thing, I enjoyed the luxury of being in a new place where nobody had ever heard me before. So in such a case, one can fall back and rely on material that's probably stale here. I've written a few new songs. I did a couple of things. But I don't think that the playing changed so much. It's refined some. I think I'm singing better than I was, which is not to say I think I'm singing well. And I think I'm playing better than I was. The folks in Italy were kind enough to get a piano for me to play. They had one in their own dwelling, but they got one for the place so that now I'm playing for the tourists when they come in. And so it's a pretty sweet setup for me there. What has really changed more for me, I guess, is there was a great gap, and I was not aware of it, in my understanding of history, of culture, and I like history. I'm very fond of history. But I really had very little understanding of the Renaissance period, Well, of course, if you go to Florence, that's really where it started and really where a lot of it happened. And so you quickly start filling in that gap. So that's been a wonderful, wonderful experience for me.
Well, Ed Reinhardt, in this edition of Radio Curious that's recorded here in the studios of Radio Curious, can you play a song for us?
Well, I believe I could play a song for you. I suppose I should play one of my original songs.
Can you tell us about the song?
This is a song I wrote several years back. It's sort of a generic, really. It's not about anything too terribly specific. Some of my songs are based very firmly in personal experiences I've had, but this is just sort of a generic idea. This song, I didn't perform this. I played the other night here in Ukiah, and Brian Hansen and Elena Casanova, Elena being a very talented pianist in her own right, brought their two children, and their son happens to be very fond of this one song, and I wasn't able to play it while he was there. So if you're out there listening, this is for you now. He's a little guy, but he likes this song. So it's called Don't You Come Creepin'. Don't you come creeping in my backyard no more. I said, now don't you come creeping in my backyard no more. You know the dogs get to barking and the neighbors complain. The way you're creeping round's driving me insane. Don't you come creeping in my backyard no more. Well, don't you come looking in my back door no more. I said, now don't you come looking in my back door no more. If I catch you peeping in the door today, I'm gonna make you come into the house to play. Don't you come peeping in my back door no more. I said, now don't you come peeping in my back door no more.
So what's the background on this? Who's the peeper?
It's the peeper I'm hoping will come sneaking in my backyard and peeping in my back door, really. It's a song about not unrequited love, but requited unlove. It's one of those how can I miss you if you won't go away sort of themes, leave me alone, why do you keep bothering me? But of course, the sub-theme is you want to be bothered, don't you? We all want to be desired to the point that people are desiring us more than we might wish, except for the ego gratification that it brings, I suppose.
How about another one?
Okay, you're kind of insatiable, aren't you, Barry?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think your music's great.
Oh,
I've always thought that, and that's why I said, yeah. Ed, come on over. Time for Radio Curious.
I imagine your listeners can tell that here at the Radio Curious studio, we're not exactly playing on the Steinway grand that we might prefer, but we do what we can with the tools we're given to do the job with.
Yeah, so, it's a five-octave Casio.
Yeah, it's a five-octave Casio, but we'll give it a try anyhow, and we'll do a blues song that does have a little more personal meaning to it. My friends done told me, my enemies too, they're the ones you've been going through, because you're bad news, you're an evil one, been breaking hearts all over town, and say you just been having fun. Bobby's gone to pieces. Sammy has been shot. Tommy spent all his money trying to get what you got. Barry's in the slammer, he's doing time for murder one. I've been drinking myself to death. Now look just what you've done, because you're bad news. You're an evil one. Been breaking hearts all over town, and say you just been having fun. Well, now I wonder what I'm gonna do. I had nothing but bad luck, baby, since I've run into you. I might give you my money, I might give you my car, I might give you everything if you'll just let me go that far. Because you're bad news, you're an evil one. Been breaking hearts all over town, and say you just been having fun.
It looks so utterly simple, sitting here watching your fingers fly on the keyboard. How do you do it? When did you first get this marvelous skill?
I started noodling on the piano at about 4 years of age. There's a picture of me, a photograph of me sitting at a piano at about four, looking over, smiling. Of course, I wasn't playing like that from the get-go. My father had played in a lot of bands in the 30s and 40s, did some radio work as well. By the time I came along, he had taken a day job with the U.S. government around Washington, D.C., but he kept one Saturday afternoon gig for my whole life, and he played right up until the weekend before he passed away. So what that meant was, of course, one doesn't allow one's father to, it's hard to learn from your own father. You just won't take it. You know, it's hard for your dad to be a teacher to you. And in fact, when I taught piano lessons in this area, many of the other piano players I know hired me to give lessons to their kids because they couldn't teach their own kids. You just don't see your parents as that kind of instructor.
Yet at the same time, he taught you piano by living the example.
Precisely so. There was the example of him practicing in the house. And very importantly, there was also the example, there was also the element that if I chose to sat down and kind of bang away on the keys, if I wasn't really interrupting something important that was going on, the inclination was to just let me do it, to let me play on the piano. Once I taught lessons, I saw a number of examples where, you know, you'd find out that the kid would be sitting there banging away and the parents would say, hey, cut out that racket. But they weren't really doing anything much. They just were being annoyed by it. So it's important. It's important. You know, music requires a lot of discipline and it requires a lot of focus. But after all, the whole thing starts from playing. The whole thing starts from messing around. So you have to be able to do that. So
I had a similar kind of situation with my father, who was an attorney, and I grew up in a house where
he let you practice law in the house?
In the house, in the very house. That's what he did. The conversation at dinner when I was a little boy was law and politics.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I learned by watching. I didn't know different.
Yeah.
Look at me now. Oh, my God.
Yeah. What can we say? It's So these things really do count for a lot. And then as the years went by, I got very involved in the music programs in my public school system. And so, of course, it makes me a little unhappy to see the fate of many music programs in many states now. They're just being cut back and reduced to almost nothing. I hear horror stories of kids going to school. They have no instruments to play. They, you know, it's just not happening. And I personally regard this as a grave setback, because music is more than just sort of some distant entertainment for children, even if they're not going to become professional musicians, which of course most people do not. Even so, it's so important for their development, for their neural development, for their physical, their mental development, their coordination. And I worry, because kids now aren't getting that with these cutbacks in the programs. And so, of course, they're sitting there playing the video games. I'm not opposed to playing video games, but there should be more. There should be more to life than that.
Music is more primal, more reptilian in our brain than language. I had a conversation in the end of last year, the end of 2006, with Dr. Daniel Levitin, who wrote a book called This Is Your Brain on Music. And he talks about how musical sounds in rhythm and song and tonal effects are more more ancient in our human species than is our language.
That's very interesting. I had not heard that. I haven't heard of the book. Of course, been out of the country, so I haven't heard of a lot of things. And even if I were here, I probably wouldn't anyhow. But that is quite fascinating.
So taking music and taking your future, where you've been since we visited shortly before you left on your journey about coming up on 5 years ago, what do you forecast for you, the future of Ed Reinhardt in music?
Man, I really don't know, Barry. I mean, I'm kind of being in the present with this. I'm sort of swinging from vine to vine, as I like to put it. I'm enjoying my situation that I seem to have developed for myself in Italy. One doesn't know how long that might last. I'm constantly meeting people over there and making musical connections. I was able to start doing some shows up in England with pretty good success. I mean, small scale.
Can you do a song in Italian for us?
Well, I can sort of fake it, but anyone who knows Italian, I should have brought the lyrics with me. I have to have them out. The only song I've learned in Italian, and I haven't really learned it, is Ciao Bella. Ciao means hello or goodbye, and Bella, of course, is beautiful. And this song was written during World War II, where Italy had a very complicated history in World War II. First, of course, they were under Mussolini and they were allied to Nazi Germany. Then when the Allies invaded Italy in 1943, they kicked out Mussolini, who then was sort of rescued by the Germans and set up a puppet government, and a partisan movement of resistance began in Italy. And this song is about that. I'll talk. Let me see how much of it I can. If you know Italian, folks, please, you'll know that I'm not getting this quite right, but I'm going to fake it a little bit because, you know, Barry's making me. So there you go. In la mattina, quando me sveglita, ciao bella, ciao bella, ciao, ciao, ciao. In la mattina, quando me sveglita, e ho trovato la invasor. O partigiano, portami via. Ciao bella, ciao bella, ciao, ciao, ciao. O partigiano, portami via. Ho paura di morir. E questo è il fiore del partigiano. Ciao bella, ciao bella, ciao, ciao, ciao. E questo è il fiore del partigiano. È morto per la libertà. Left out a few verses there, but that's the basic idea. The song is saying, I woke up this morning and saw that my country was occupied by the invader. Partisans carry me away to the mountains where I fear I may die. And the verses I left out say, if I die on the mountain, bury me on the mountain, and a flower will grow. And when people walk by and see this flower, they will say, he died for liberty. And this song is probably the most popular kind of folk song in Italy.
Currently,
yes. Everyone seems to know it. Children know it. It's sort of like what Home on the Range may have been for us in our country a few decades ago.
Except it has a strong political overtone.
Well, it has. There are variations on it which have been adapted. Of course, most of these partisans were originally communist, and it may not be a coincidence that the song has a very Russian kind of sound to it. But they do have, one of the things I like about Italy is it remains politically pretty dynamic. They have, nearly fascist parties. They have three variations on the Communist Party. And then, of course, they have the center, which is much larger. It's not like our two-party system. It's
the top of the bell curve.
Yes, exactly so.
Well, Ed, we'll see you in about a year. Early in January, you hope to come back.
I hope to come back.
Professional piano concert.
We'll see what happens there. I mean, I'm not really a local person here anymore, and so that decision is not in my hands. I would like to come back. I hope to come back, but people may decide that there are compelling reasons to move in new directions. I don't know.
Well, Ed Reinhardt, it's a pleasure, as always, to have you here on Radio Curious. And before we close, is there an interesting book that you can tell us about?
Well, I did read a book. I read the English version. I'm trying to struggle through some books in Italian, but this one I read in English by an author named Tiziano Terzani. It was called A Fortune Teller Told Me, Earthbound Travels in the Far East. I was lucky enough to meet Terzani's widow. He passed away just a couple of years ago. And in the book, he travels around the Far East because he always flew everywhere. He was a correspondent for Der Spiegel. But a fortune teller told him not to fly in this particular year. And sort of as an experiment, as a skeptical experiment, he decided not to do it and ended up traveling by boat, by rail, and realized that one could really learn a lot more about what you're passing through by traveling on land. It was a fascinating book, wonderful, very insightful about the world, about the nature of politics and whatnot. The man was really, really quite insightful.
Well, Ed Reinhardt, please come back to Ukiah and Mendocino County, visit us again, and thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure, Barry.
Ed Reinhardt is an old friend and a very accomplished piano player and someone I always love to have here on Radio Curious. The book that he recommends is A Fortune Teller Told Me, Earthbound Travels in the Far East by Tiziano Terzani. It's a paperback and you can find it on Amazon. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format for $10 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. And the phone is 707-462-6541. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for joining us.